Hey, welcome to the Growth Dummy summary of Hooked by Nir Eyal. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing that name right, so he'll have to forgive me. But anyway, Hooked shows how to create digital products that are engaging, compelling, and habit-forming. Nir Eyal reveals how big tech companies like Google, Twitter, and Facebook keep us coming back to their apps over and over again. His Hooked model includes four steps: trigger, action, variable reward, and investment. Our top quote from this book is, 79% of smartphone users check their device within 15 minutes of waking up every morning, end quote. Have you ever found yourself addicted to a new app or website? I'm sure we've all been there. First, we discover some cool new app, and then suddenly we're spending way too much time in it, scrolling, tapping, or swiping endlessly, and then coming back to do it again, day after day after day. Well, it's not surprising that many tech companies are trying to make their products as engaging as possible. I mean, if you are an app developer, then your primary goal would be to have people return to use your product repeatedly. The more time people spend using it, the more revenue you will usually generate. Well, so that's why this book, Hooked, has become popular in the tech startup community, because it's promising to help us design apps that are more engaging, compelling, and habit-forming. I think it can also help us learn some of the tricks of big tech companies so we can avoid falling into distraction ourselves. And finally, at the end, the author will talk about the ethics of hooking users. In what situations is it ethical to use these ideas? Nir Eyal is an author, speaker, and investor. After finishing his MBA, he co-founded a tech company that placed ads into online social games on Facebook, and his career has always been at the crossroads of business, technology, and psychology. Later, he became a consultant in product design, working with many companies, big and small. He helps them find ways to motivate their users to build positive habits around the products. And he's also lectured in marketing at Stanford and other schools. So let's jump into the first lesson, why create user habits. So first of all, what are habits? Habits are behaviors that we repeat over and over again without much thought. We all have countless habits because they simplify our lives. Common habits include brushing our teeth, making coffee in the morning, scrolling through social media, etc. In the fantastic recent book Atomic Habits, the author James Clear explains that habits are basically mental shortcuts. For example, imagine that one day someone felt stressed, so they had a cigarette and felt better. As a result, their mind learns that smoking is a reliable solution for that feeling of being stressed. And so in the future, they're more likely to use that behavior as a shortcut to feel better again. You can learn more about the science of habits in our summary of Atomic Habits by James Clear at growth.me. So an app or a website can also become part of our habits when it provides a reliable solution or shortcut to a problem. For example, when we feel bored, we may go to YouTube or turn on the news. When we feel uncertain, we may go to Google. When we feel hungry, we may open a food delivery app. Should you try to create customer habits around your product? Well, habits are not necessary for all types of businesses. For example, if you're selling insurance, that product is only purchased one time, and you don't need to keep contacting your users. However, many businesses will get four major benefits from user habits. The first benefit is a higher customer lifetime value. The more often your average customer visits your app, website, e-commerce store, etc., the more valuable they will usually become, meaning they'll probably spend more money. And this is true whether your business model is advertising, subscriptions, individual purchases, and so on. The second benefit of user habits is less price sensitivity. A product that is integrated into a user's life can increase its prices a lot more easily than a product that is used very casually and therefore easily replaceable. The third benefit for you is faster viral growth. The more a user comes back to an app, the more likely they'll be to talk about it with their friends. And this is a big reason for the success of many social media apps like Pinterest, Instagram, or Facebook. And the fourth benefit is greater resistance to competition. User habits provide a barrier to entry for any new competitors that you may face. For example, when most people have a question, they automatically go to visit Google. And that means it's very, very hard for any new search engine to compete with Google because we all have this long-time habit of going to Google automatically. Okay, so at the core of this book is Nir Eyal's four-step hook model. He says a user must pass through each of these four steps until they form a habit. And they include 1, triggers, 2, actions, 3, variable rewards, and 4, investments. And we'll be covering each of these four steps in more detail in this summary. And by the way, it's very interesting to see how much the model in this book was inspired by some other recent best-selling books about habits. For example, we just mentioned that book, Atomic Habits by James Clear. So in that book, there's a habit loop, which also includes four steps, which are called cue, craving, response, and reward. But even that author says that he was inspired by previous thinkers and psychologists. So all these books are like building on each other. Okay, so a summary of this first lesson. Habits are behaviors that we repeat automatically, like brushing our teeth every night. Becoming part of a user's habits gives us a higher customer lifetime value, less price sensitivity, faster viral growth, and a greater resistance to new competitors. Okay, and now lesson two. Start with triggers. The first step of creating a user habit are triggers, and these nudge someone to take an action. For example, when we see a notification on our phones and then when we tap it to visit the app, that notification was the trigger. So there are two major types of triggers, external and internal. External triggers come from our environment. This means engagement with a product is often initiated externally, through triggers like paid advertising, viral marketing, publicity, word of mouth, etc. External triggers are often too expensive or uncertain to rely on forever, but they're great for getting new users to come to our app the first time. And we also have owned triggers. These are a highly valuable subcategory of external triggers. Owned triggers are ones that our users have given us, have given their permission to receive, like email newsletters or app notifications, and they allow us to repeatedly contact a user, which is very useful for building those habits. Okay, next we have internal triggers. These come from inside of someone, and they include their emotions, thoughts, and mental associations. For example, when we feel bored waiting in line, that feeling may trigger us to pull out our phone and begin scrolling a newsfeed. Negative emotions are frequent triggers for product usage. From loneliness to irritation, we often use apps and products to scratch these emotional itches or disturbances. So if we want to get started understanding how to use internal triggers for our products, we must put ourselves in our customer's shoes. Imagine exactly where someone would be and what they would be doing before opening your app. What specific emotions, frustrations, or pain points could they be using your product as a solution for? The founder of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, says a major reason for their success is doing this, and he calls this technique writing user narratives. And by the way, in the marketing book Contagious, the professor Jonah Berger explains how companies often create triggers that make their customers remember their products more often. And they do it by creating new mental associations between their product and an unrelated idea. For example, in 2007, the sales of Kit Kat chocolate bars were struggling, so they designed a radio advertising campaign that repeatedly talked about coffee and Kit Kat bars together. Their goal was to make people think of Kit Kat every time they had a coffee break. Apparently, this campaign was a big success because afterwards, Kit Kat sales rose from $300 million to $500 million. You can learn more fascinating viral marketing strategies in our summary of Contagious by Jonah Berger at growth.me. Okay, summary of this lesson. The first step of creating habits are triggers, which nudge people to take some action like visiting our app. External triggers come from outside, like paid advertising, email newsletters, and app notifications. Internal triggers include the user's own feelings, thoughts, and mental connections. Okay, next we have lesson three, make action easy. The second step of a habit is action. This is what the user does after receiving the trigger, usually because they expect a reward. Desired actions may include a person opening our app, going to our website, sharing our brand with their friends, and so forth. How can we encourage users to take the right actions? According to BJ Fogg, a director at Stanford University, there are three parts to every human action: motivation, ability, and triggers. Let's understand these one by one. First is motivation. This is how strongly someone desires the reward of taking the action. Most products tap into a few core human motivations, like the desires we have for pleasure, social acceptance, sex appeal, etc. Equally motivating are things we desire to move away from, like pain, rejection, terror, etc. Okay, the second part is ability. This is how difficult or easy it is to complete the action. The easier something is to do, the more likely someone will do it. And new technologies often succeed through removing steps in the process compared to the old way of doing things. So we can increase our users' ability to take an action by making it faster, simpler, cheaper, or automatic to do. Okay, the third part are triggers. That's what initiates the action, and we just talked about that in the last lesson. So the best way to encourage our users to take an action is to make it simpler or easier to do by removing steps. It's difficult to increase someone's motivation to do something. I mean, that's very complicated. But there are countless ways that we can make our products more intuitive, usable, and friendly. For example, look at Google. When they first launched, there were countless big competitors, including Yahoo and Alta Vista. However, those other search engine homepages were crammed full of distractions and links and news and ads. And then Google removed everything but the essentials, making their website the easiest to use, and we all know how much they succeeded and dominated from that move. Okay, so a summary of this lesson. The second step of user habits is action. You can encourage your users to take the right action by making it as simple as possible to do. Reduce any steps or distractions, and Google is a great example of how to do this right. Now we have lesson four, offer variable rewards. The third step of user habits are variable rewards. This is the satisfaction of a desire which causes people to repeat the behavior in the future. Watching a funny video, viewing a sensual image or video, or getting social likes, these all stimulate the dopamine reward centers in our brains. Research also shows that our desire is greatly increased when the reward is variable or unpredictable. The influential psychologist B.F. Skinner was conducting an experiment getting pigeons to tap a lever so they could get pellets of food, and he discovered that pigeons became far more motivated to tap those levers when the food rewards were made to be unpredictable, meaning sometimes they received the food and sometimes they didn't. And this may be the same mechanism that makes gambling so addictive, because it also offers those unpredictable rewards. Nir Eyal says there are three major types of rewards. First are rewards of the tribe. This is feeling social acceptance, approval, or connection. One of our deepest evolutionary drives is to belong to a tribe. Well, it's no secret that many of the most addictive apps are highly social. Users interact with others, and they're very motivated to receive more likes, shares, retweets, and so on. Second are rewards of the hunt. Another basic drive that we all have is to hunt and gather resources. In our modern world, this drive can be expressed by hunting for valuable information, such as the perfect image on Pinterest. Third is rewards of the self. This is chasing the feeling of personal competence or accomplishment. For example, many video games reward players with achievements for finishing a quest or reaching a high score. Here's a quote from the book. Our brains are adapted to seek rewards that make us feel accepted, attractive, important, and included. End quote. A final critical ingredient for a product to hold our attention is ongoing novelty. You see, if we feel like we fully understand or know something, then we usually become bored with it. And that's why the most habit-forming products always have some element of endless novelty. A great source of this novelty can come from interaction with other users. For example, we can't watch the same movie every day no matter how good it is. But we could visit YouTube every day, and many of us do, usually because other users are always creating something new on the platform, and so we know we'll always find something new to entertain us. So we need that ongoing novelty. Okay, so here's a summary of this lesson. The third step of user habits are variable rewards, the somewhat unpredictable satisfaction of a desire. Common rewards include social acceptance, sensory stimulation, and personal accomplishment. Continuous novelty is also important, and it can be provided through user-generated content or interaction. And next is lesson 5, ask for investment. So the fourth and final step of creating user habits is investment. This means getting the user to do some work or contribute to the product in some way through their effort, their data, their social connections, etc. Here's a quote. The more users invest time and effort into a product or service, the more they value it. In fact, there's ample evidence to suggest that our labor leads to love. End quote. The most engaging apps become more valuable to us as we spend more time in them. For example, YouTube logs our preferences as we watch more videos. So just by using YouTube, it becomes smarter about recommending cool new videos that we will enjoy, and so we're likely to spend more and more time on it. Another example, Amazon Kindle lets us build a virtual library which we can access anywhere. And so the more books that we buy there, the more valuable that our Kindle becomes. However, with each new purchase, we also become less likely to switch to a new service and lose all those old books that we've purchased. Another example, Twitter is valuable primarily because all those users have invested in it. I mean, the core app itself is very simple. Any programmer could build it within a few days. However, those Twitter users have already invested so much of their time building followers and following other users, and so they're unlikely to switch to a new platform. And by the way, the billionaires Peter Thiel and Elon Musk, they deeply understand this importance of user investment. The first startup they co-founded together was PayPal, and they knew they needed to get ahead of all the other companies they were competing with to become the number one online payments app. So they came up with a brilliant idea. They paid their users directly to invite their friends. That's right, if you were an early PayPal user, then you could ask your friend to sign up through a special link, and then you would both receive $10. Now, this was a very expensive marketing strategy, but it paid off. When people added their social connections to the platform, that was an important form of investment. And so PayPal became the website people went to when they needed to send money online because all their friends were already signed up to it. And if you want to learn more very smart strategies for business and investing, check out our summary of Peter Thiel's book, 0 to 1. You can find it at growth.me. Okay, so a summary of this lesson. The fourth step is investment, which means having the user contribute something into our product like their data, social connections, money, etc. The more someone uses our product, the more valuable and customized it should become to them. Okay, now we have lesson six, habit testing. Habit testing is a practical process to help us apply the hook model to our own products. In a nutshell, this is about finding our most engaged users and then creating more of them. It contains three steps: identify, codify, and modify. Let's look at these one by one. First is identify. Find out who your product's most engaged users are right now. And this is best done using analytics tools like cohort analysis. And you can do a quick Google search if you want to learn more about that. That's cohort analysis. The second step is codify. So this is about finding out what common actions those engaged users are taking. Nir Eyal also calls this the habit path. Which actions do users need to take before they become really engaged with using your app? For example, if you're making a calendar app, then you may find that your most engaged users become that way after they've added 5 events to their schedule. Okay, and the third step is modify. This is making it easier for more users to take those same actions that lead to habit formation. So, for going back to that last example, you could do this by making it easier for users to schedule those first 5 events, and once they begin using your app, then they may become hooked. Okay, so you can modify your app like this in many different ways, including more emphasis on certain features, adding a beginner tutorial, a new onboarding process, a simpler design, some kind of strategic notifications, etc. This process, which is called habit testing, it's all about finding what is working and then doing more of it. Nir Eyal says it's based on something called the Lean Startup process created by Eric Ries. Now, Eric Ries co-founded the popular social messaging app IMVU. He also wrote the book The Lean Startup, which is probably the number one recommended book for people who want to create technology startups. So we read that book at Growth.me, and basically Eric Ries says that startups should avoid relying too much on detailed business plans. Rather, the Lean Startup approach is to launch a minimum viable product and then adapt as you go along based on measuring your user's behavior. In his book, Ries wrote, quote, "What differentiates success stories from the failures is that the successful entrepreneurs had the foresight, the ability, and the tools to discover which parts of their plans were working brilliantly and which parts were misguided, and adapt their strategies accordingly," end quote. And you can learn more in our summary of The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. That is a great book too. Okay, so a summary of this lesson: habit testing is finding our most engaged users and creating more of them. First, we must identify who our most passionate users are. Then we must codify which behaviors they have in common, and then modify our product to nudge more users down that same path. All right, so we're basically finished this summary. I hope you enjoyed it. This book provides a wide variety of ideas and tools that we can use to create those user habits. However, before you go, I'm sure a lot of us hearing these ideas would feel a bit troubled by some of the ethical implications. I mean, perhaps we should be asking not only how do we hook users, but also, should we? Well, Nir Eyal addresses these concerns near the end of his book, and he says there's a simple test to check if we're using these tools for good or evil. We must ask ourselves 2 questions. Here's a quote: "First, would I use the product myself? And second, will the product help users materially improve their lives?" End quote. So generally, if we can answer yes to those two questions, then we are building a product that will improve our users' lives in some way. And in the end, that's what we should all be aiming for, isn't it? Helping others to create habits that are positive, healthy, and constructive. All right, so I hope you enjoy this, and I'll see you in the next book summary.